Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us from delivering powerful, meaningful and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next-door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings and, of course, your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy. Your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Oh yeah, Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9.
Thanks, Macca. Macca, we've spoken with epidemiologists, we've spoken with the Chief Health Officer.
Ministers.
We've spoken with ministers, but we have not yet spoken with somebody who has had a lived experience of COVID-19. And to share their experience with us this morning, we have Dr. David Lawson. David is a recently acquired a doctorate and is a clinical psychologist, and he's here to talk to us about his personal experience. Good morning to you, David.
Good morning, Taz. Good morning, Macca.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I've recovered fairly well. Yeah, I think there might be a little bit of ongoing kind of fatigue and that kind of stuff, but overall, I think I feel pretty lucky with the way I've recovered. So, yeah.
David, I've already earlier on in this show, I've announced how I actually met you first of all, which was through Macca, perhaps 15 or 20 years ago. And I've also said to our listeners this morning that we have been Facebook friends for a while, and it was when I actually read your post about your personal experience that I was motivated to contact you and ask you to talk to our listeners this morning about your personal experience. Tell us what happened. Tell us how you actually got this.
Sure, yeah. I'd spent a couple of weeks in the UK. I went over at the end of February to visit my partner, and it was about mid-March that I was, the world was getting a bit weird and everything was kind of starting to kick off, I guess, and so I flew home, I think I landed on the Tuesday, and by the Friday I kind of started to notice this intermittent cough. And I felt really fatigued, and it certainly didn't feel like jet lag. It was something else. It was another level. I just had nothing in the tank at all. That was probably about the Friday. And then over the next couple of days, my chest got tight. I was getting a bit short of breath. And by the Sunday, I decided to ring the hotline, the Department of Health COVID hotline, and they suggested I call the hospital. I called the Alfred and went in and got tested, and a few days later it came back positive.
Were you isolating during that time?
Yeah, that's right. So because I had flown in from overseas at that point, it was it had come in already that anyone flying in from overseas needed to isolate for 2 weeks. So I had, basically, from the airport, I came straight home. I remember a good friend of mine had left some food, some bread and milk and things out on the bench when I got home. And, I was by myself and didn't leave the apartment. And the only time I left the apartment was to go and get tested during that time, yeah.
So how long was that period? And tell us what it felt like. Describe to us what it was like to actually be in the middle of this illness.
Yeah. So it was a bit of a slow burn at first. Like, it didn't all come on very quickly. It kind of crept up. Thankfully, I never had a fever. That was, one of the key symptoms for a lot of people, but I don't ever recall having much of a fever. But by the end of the first week, you know, breathing was getting quite difficult. I was coughing a lot. I couldn't talk. I couldn't talk without a coughing fit. And yeah, for a few days, at its worst, I was getting genuinely worried, a little bit scared, because breathing was getting that difficult. There were a couple of days in there that, yeah, I was thinking that, you know, if this feels any worse tomorrow, I really should think about kind of checking into the hospital. Thankfully, that didn't happen. I was lucky, but I can certainly see how easily it can become that dangerous. You know, I think I was really kind of at the edge. You know, kind of a line ball.
So you said that you said in your Facebook post that you had a mild case. This sounds like it wasn't at all mild. It sounds horribly shocking to me.
Yeah, I think with my post, I might have been, you know, trying to not panic people and, you know, wanted to keep things, you know, positive and hopeful. I didn't want to kind of say that I was, you know, it was too bad. But if I'm honest now, it was getting quite difficult to breathe. I think my, you know, the people around me, my partner had come home by then. And I think people were getting a bit worried. Yeah.
So how did you look after yourself? I mean, who was around you? Who was out there supporting you and looking after you in this time? Because presumably you wouldn't be allowed outside your apartment and you wouldn't be able to shop for food and you wouldn't be able to go and get medication, if you needed medication, that is. How did you look after yourself?
Yeah. I was showing such kindness and generosity around that time. I had friends dropping, you know, bags of groceries outside the apartment door. The guy who runs our regular, you know, our local cafe that we go to a lot, he did a big cook-up and he left all these kind of, you know, meals, bags of meals outside the door that we could kind of collect. Yeah, but interestingly, so my partner came back, and of course he had to go into isolation as well. But he arrived just around the time that I got the positive test result, and so of course we had to kind of isolate from each other in the apartment. So thankfully we had a second room with a kind of pull-out couch and a second bathroom. We're lucky to have those, because those were the only two rooms that I had for about 2 weeks. He came home and we couldn't be in the same room together for about 2 weeks. We were a bit worried about, you know, understandably, that, you know, that I might kind of you know, pass it on to him. So he was kind of making meals for me and kind of leaving them outside my door, and I'd kind of come out when he'd left and scurry back into my room and eat. Yeah, I didn't basically leave this room for about 2 weeks.
Could you give us a bit more of an explanation of what it actually felt like? You know, how did you feel with this
condition?
Physically and mentally. How did you feel?
Sure. Yeah. So physically, it was really quite. You know, the fatigue was kind of debilitating. And very difficult to breathe and coughing a lot. And I'd never experienced like anything like that before. But you know, mental health wise, you know, I think mentally there was a lot of anxiety around this. You know, not really knowing, you know, what was possible. I was, you know, worried about my own health, but also worried about, you know, my partner who was in the apartment. Even though we weren't in the same room, I was worried that even if I was, you know, going to recover, you know, he might not recover as well. And, you know, that creates a lot of anxiety. And then there's the isolation, you know, 2 weeks in a room where you can't even go out into the kitchen, really. That was difficult.
Were you able to do things like read or watch TV or scroll Facebook, so to speak? I mean,
sure,
what your energy levels like?
Energy levels were pretty low. You know, there was certainly, you know, Facebook and, you know, there was Netflix to kind of get me through, I suppose. Lots of Ryan Murphy and Tiger King, I suppose. But that's kind of a lot of, you know, what I did for quite a long time.
Can I ask David? It's Macca.
Yeah.
So recently, you know, the result of a lot of hard work and application, you know, you're qualified as a clinical psychologist. So, do you self analyze your feelings and understand where they're coming from and how to deal with them? Because I think the physical health aspects, you know, you said yourself that it was not mild, but relatively mild. It's the mental health that is often unseen and that works away in the background. Give us your perspective on that.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's more difficult to measure, mm-hmm. you know, as you say, to see the mental health aspects. And just to qualify that, I'm not a clinical psychologist as such. I'm a neuropsychologist or a neuropsychology registrar at the moment. We are to a certain
extent. Don't undersell yourself, David.
I think I am, you know, probably a bit more aware of, some of the strategies and understanding kind of the mental health aspects and ways to kind of, look after myself than a lot of other people might be able to do. I think, you know, the anxiety, you know, I was using strategies that I would tell clients to try and relax and kind of manage that anxiety. Thankfully, you know, I think I had great support. You know, my partner was here. I had, you know, friends and family were certainly, you know, making sure that I wasn't feeling too isolated, you know, or depressed. But, you know, there's certainly the mental health aspects for a lot of people is something we need to really talk about and spend a lot of time trying to manage.
So, David, why did you agree to come on air this morning and tell your story? What motivated you to do that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Tess. I did struggle with that a little bit. I'm generally a fairly private person. I don't post a lot on social media.
No, hardly anything, actually. Hardly anything.
You'd be looking. I'm pretty reserved in that respect. But then, you know, a few days in, I was really conscious of the feeling of anxiety in the community. I was watching, you know, what people were saying and worried about, and also watching people struggle with what to believe. Mm. You know, seeing people, you know, kind of questioning, I suppose, whether the virus was real, and if it would be affecting younger people. And I think I felt a bit of a responsibility at that point. I realized that as difficult as it was, and whether there might be a little bit of kind of stigma involved as well, I kind of felt I needed to suck it up and actually be a bit more open about the experience so other people could actually get a little bit you know, of understanding about what it's like, and that it is real and it is dangerous and it is happening to, you know, people around them. So I felt that responsibility to, you know, my friends and my family, but also, I guess, the wider community.
I think one of the great opportunities you have, David, and you know, thank you for deciding to come on and talk about it, is that, you know, with your qualifications and your lived experience now, that hopefully that's going to provide, I know it will provide some real value for people in the community. We've had a look, we've had a lot of messages about it. I see the physical health issues are well covered. You know, our public health system is dealing with that pretty well. The challenge is the mental health challenge, because so much of it is going to be hidden. So many people have been in isolation. They've lived their life in isolation. They're now in actual complete physical isolation. And the mental health impacts are going to be huge. So, you know, what do you say to people that are in that situation? What is your advice to them, mate?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm finding, you know, with some of my clients as well, that that healthcare services are being disrupted. You know, there's a lot of people out there who, you know, they're experiencing that isolation. You know, sometimes most of the social interaction that people have is through carers and therapists, and when that gets disrupted, it can really impact on mental health for people who are in, you know, unfortunate situations, you know, with their health. And I would certainly, you know, my message, I think, is to everyone, I think, is that this is absolutely the time that we need to kind of dig deep and reach out and find that level, that new level of sort of kindness and generosity and patience. Yeah. And you know, I think that's because we don't know what the next person is going through. And you know, I think that hope and positivity, I think they're also infectious. And that's what I think we need to kind of show to get each other through, because you're right, that mental health aspect, you know, we don't really understand, you know, what we won't have a clear picture of what the long-term implications of that will be for some people. I think we need to be extra kind and try and, you know, be connected, even though we're not physically connected. To try and be as connected as we can.
Thank you so much, David. It's a really lovely words to finish off on, kindness.
Nice to hear
and
yours.
Connections. Absolutely lovely words. David, just for your information, our switchboard, really our computer screen.
You always say switchboard.
I know, I like that. But it's a computer screen. We've actually been inundated with messages. Really lovely message from Melina, who says, thank you so much for a fantastic interview. After seeing so many selfish people who are being idiots and trying to defy authorities and being entitled to this interview should be compulsory listening.
There you go.
So thank you for sharing your story with us. Thank you for being available this morning. Can I wish you all the best with your recovery, and I hope that you can get back to 110% with where you're at. Best wishes to you, David.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.